What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
We're back here on Sports Talk, but it is a inside black and gold takeover that our mad scientist here, Jeff Nowak, has set up where you can stream it online on YouTube.
Yeah, you can on WWL Sports. I've been calling it the Power Hour. I have to give Cohen credit for that because I enjoy it. So if we've been drinking. We're going to take a shot every minute of this show. So you can't see us at home, but no, we're not doing that.
They can't see us at home.
Oh man, they can't see us. That's the whole point of this. What am I talking about? But yeah, this final hour is going to be kind of a crossover episode with the podcast, and we're going to put it in the podcast feed, and I think this is going to be our plan for the rest of the off season of this final hour of the Friday show. That's kind of just, you know, do with it what you want, is going to be that. And so we're going to go through some stuff. We're going to have the interview with
Will Birchford, covering the Lions for 97.1 The Ticket in Detroit, helping us break down Lions Commanders and also get a little insights on what he thinks about defensive coordinator Aaron Glenn, who could be a candidate. Well, he's a candidate for the head coaching job here in New Orleans, but a bunch of other places too.
Yeah, and that game's going to be a shootout, man. You know, one thing you can say about the Commanders and the Lions, they put up points and they do not stop points. You know, they outscore you. I could see that game being in the 40s on both sides because that's the type of game we saw the Lions play later in the year. And that's why it's funny. We're like, hey, we want to hire their defensive coordinator of a team that's like losing games they score 40 points in. But hey, we're going to figure it out. But I want to talk about the draft and not the Lions draft, not the Commanders draft, because they've been doing okay in those. I'm talking about the Saints drafts. And, you know, so
I'm going to bundle up because it's going to get chilly here.
It's going to get cold. It's going to get cold. And, yeah, it's not a lot of hot takes. Saints have not drafted well. That's not a hot take at all. But so it can be tough to evaluate a draft, right? In the sense of like, what's a good draft versus what's not a good draft? And you can get caught up in like, oh, you got one star player, but then the rest of the draft wasn't good. So was that a good draft? And so I kind of came up with a rubric for what I perceive a good draft to be. And one of my rules is I need 3 years to evaluate whether a draft qualifies in these categories. So 2023, 2024, it's just too early. Like, you know, I'm trying to establish, did you pull starters out of the draft? Did you pull star players out of the draft? And you really can't tell. Like Isaiah Foskey, everyone's calling him a bust right now. If he shows up next year and is a starter, then suddenly that pick looks better. And I think it's just too early. Like, people would have said Trevor Penning is never going to be a starter for the Saints. Started all 17 games this year. I think he had a solid year. We'll see how they do with him from now on. But that changed, right? So in year three, I feel a lot differently about Trevor than I did after year two. So to me, a quality draft is at least one player with star potential. So a guy that you could see playing in a Pro Bowl. Like, for example, Chris Olave, I call him one of those players. He hasn't made a Pro Bowl, but he could. You know, he's definitely got that talent, that ceiling. So that's, I want one of those guys out of every draft. If I don't get one, it's not a good draft. Now, obviously, if you have higher picks, that's easier to do. But either way, that's kind of just the baseline. I want to pull at least three starters out of every draft class. That includes the star player. And so that's two more. And I'm not talking about year one starters. I'm talking about over the course of their career, they start games. So even like an Adam Trautman, I call a starter in this metric. And then I want to pull backups, at least two special team caliber guys.
That piece is right.
Those are interesting because it's like, hey, if you're a fourth to seventh rounder, that's where I want to be pulling my backups and special teamers. I don't want a first round pick to be a backup or a special teamer. So that number can get kind of weird. But so that's, I want five quality players out of every draft class to call it a good draft. Not an elite draft, just a good draft. If I get fewer than that, it depends how many of those are starters and how many of those are special teamers. But so I went through each draft dating back to 2016 and did this. And so 2017 through 2022, if I add up the quality, or if I add up my goal totals for those five draft classes, I would be hoping to pull in five players with star potential over those five draft classes, 15 starters. Sounds like a lot, but it's really not when you consider this is five draft classes. So that's an entire rookie contract is 4 years. So some of those starters that you pulled out of that first draft wouldn't even be on the roster by the time you get to the second half. So, I mean, that's not that many. I want 15 starters over 5 years. That's averaging three a year. And then backup special teams, I'd like to say I have in the range of 10 that are contributors. Now, again, I'd like those backups and special teamers to be coming in day three. Over those five drafts, the reality, what actually happened by my determination, you had two players with star potential. So I'm looking for five. I got two. You have Eric McCoy and Chris Olave. Those are my two. No one else over those five draft classes I would consider to be star players. Starters. I'm looking for 15. I got 11. Now, keep in mind, that 11 is generous because I'm talking about, you know, Marcus Davenport, starter. Adam Trautman, starter. Tre'Quan Smith, starter. So even by those standards, like, those starters are not blowing anyone off the page. And I got four fewer than I actually wanted in terms of my goals. Keep in mind, these are my goals, but I think they're reasonable. And then backup and special teamers, I ended up with six. Okay. Not applicable. Like, didn't end up doing anything for you. Got cut. Didn't play. I have 11 players. 11 of those 27 picks ended up being just non-entities. You know, and like a guy like Rick Nelson included is a fourth-round pick that you cut out of camp. Fourth-round pick. Those are the types of draft picks you were getting. And so, for perspective, the two draft classes prior to this, 2017 and 2016, before this run of cold winters that seems to never end, you ended up making, let's see, 12 total picks. So over two drafts, my goals would be two star players, six starters, four special teamers or backups. Over these two drafts, I got four star potential players. So you're talking about Marshawn Lattimore, Ryan Ramczyk, Alvin Kamara, Michael Thomas. And then 10 starters over those four drafts. You made 12 picks. You got 10 starters. And these guys are like Trey Hendrickson, Alex Anzalone, Marcus Williams, right? Like, quality players. That,
yeah, Hendrickson's a star.
Right. You're like, I call him a starter rather than a star, because if the Saints considered him to be a star.
Right. Here he was, yeah, just a starter, right?
They would have paid him. They didn't consider him to be a star, so they let him walk. Now, In fairness to the next five drafts, guys like Zach Bond, Caden Ellis, I count among the backups, because much like Trey Hendrickson, if you considered them a starter, you probably would have paid them. They'd probably still be here. The reason you let them walk is because you considered them to be backups. Now, you probably were wrong. But so you pulled 10 starters out of two drafts. And since that point, from 2018 to 2022, you pulled 11 starters out of five drafts. That's why you cannot compete. That is why you are struggling. When players go down, when your frontline players go down, you don't have anyone to fill in for them because you have not drafted quality players. And that's the story of this team. That is why you have gotten to this point. Now, I feel like they've drafted better over the last 2 years. It's still too early, but I think these last two drafts, you've gotten two star quality players in Brian Brzee and Taliese Fuaga. That's my goal, is to get at least one per draft. I feel like I've gotten them. You've gotten a handful of players that I would call starters, like Kool-Aid McKinstry. I consider him a starter. Trevor Penning, I consider him a starter, right? Alante Taylor, I consider him a starter. But those are 2021, so you're going back a little farther.
Right.
Either way, it's tough. And until, like, you
the,
can...
The Foskey, Kendra Miller, though, picks are obviously up in the air right,
yeah,
now.
Yeah, and those are tough because, you know, they haven't played. And so, you know, I kind of look at him as, hey, Zach Bond didn't play, and then he left, and he's a star somewhere else. So it's like, I need to see these guys on the field before I can make a determination. Isaiah and Kendra are in two different situations because Isaiah was healthy all year. You just didn't get him on the field, and Kendra Miller was hurt all year, and you would have loved to get him on the field. So, and when Kendra has played, he's been a good contributor. And when Isaiah has played, I just haven't seen anything. So I don't know. But you could hire whatever coach you want. You know, you could say, hey, this is, we can make the best pick at quarterback possible. If you do not draft better, if you do not find a way to bring in quality players through the draft, you will not turn this thing around. It's the only way to dig yourself out of a salary cap hole, to get back to a point where you are in Super Bowl contention, not just, hey, maybe we can back into the playoffs. Maybe we can win a weak NFC South. You got to draft better. And you got to look at those 2016, 2017 drafts. 2016, you only made 5 picks. You hit on 4 of them, right? You're talking about Michael Thomas, David Onyemata, Sheldon Rankins, right? Quality players, Von Bell. Even Daniel Lasco, like, he's kind of a non-entity, but I actually think he was on track to be a core special teamer, and then he had a back injury. He made it to the roster, and he was playing special teams when he got hurt. So you got to go back, and you got to figure it out. One thing you pointed out that, I don't know, if you look back and you say, what changed in this front office that seems to have a direct line to the point where we stopped being able to draft well? Terry Fontenot went to Atlanta. And suddenly, it seems like the drafting fell off a cliff.
No, that definitely seemed like a huge turn there. It's like wondering what happened to the scouting department.
Right. I mean, and it's tough. You don't. It's almost too simple to say like that's the answer. But man, the timing there makes a lot of sense.
We are taking a break here on Sports Talk. When we get back, we'll talk to Will Birchfield covering the Lions for The Ticket in Detroit. Right after this, stay tuned on WWL.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of Season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back here on Sports Talk and our Power Hour for Inside Black and Gold. Happy to welcome in now Will Birchfield, Lions reporter for 97.1 The Ticket. How you doing, Will? You ready for this playoff game on Sunday?
Yeah, no, we're fired up. I'm actually across from Ford Field as we speak, and you can already feel the energy in downtown Detroit beginning to buzz. So, yeah, the city's been waiting for this one for 2 weeks now and also 65 years. So, yeah, they're pretty fired up.
So y'all were on the road. It was in Tampa last year, correct? No.
No, Lions were home last year for two games, the Rams, the Bucks, and went on the road to San Fran.
Gotcha. You know, so what is the – does it feel different this year? Because, you look at the Lions, and everything about this season would indicate this should not have gone the way it did, right? Like, you get all these injuries. Even, a David Montgomery goes down. You think he's lost for the season, and then it's like, oh, wait, no, he's actually got some super growth or healing factor, like Wolverine, which is like, actually, I'm back. It's kind of fascinating because, you know, we watched the season with the Saints, and one of the reasons we're like, yeah, this couldn't have gone well. They had all these injuries. Well, the Lions were dealing with an insane number of injuries, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, and just kept winning. I mean, 15-2, it's crazy. So is there just this kind of belief factor with that team that even when things don't go well, they just find a way?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's why, for my money, Dan Campbell is worthy of Coach of the Year. And obviously, he was someone who was groomed in New Orleans under Sean Payton and still speaks about Payton in glowing terms. And, you know, I probably would have cast my vote for Kevin O'Connell, even entering that season finale, just given the work he had done with Sam Darnold to turn him into what looked like maybe a franchise quarterback from a bust. But for Dan Campbell to take it to the Vikings and O'Connell not once but twice this year with a completely injury-ravaged defense just spoke volumes about the way that he and his coaching staff get their guys prepared to play each week and then get them to buy into the game plan. Dan Campbell has this uncanny ability to forecast the way a game is going to unfold and how his team is going to need to play like quarter by quarter to win that game. And he breaks it down to his players, typically the Friday before each game. And you know, they'll tell you most weeks it goes almost exactly according to his script. And so no matter who they send out there, the players are fully bought into the plan. And then they obviously just play their tails off and then some for not just Campbell, but Aaron Glenn and Ben Johnson and the rest of these coaches here. There is such a trust, mutual trust between the coaches and the players. And I think that's one of the biggest reasons for this 14-2 team. You know, it's crazy. If you had told me in August that they'd be missing half of their defensive starters for most of the season, including Aiden Hutchinson, who was playing at a defensive player of the year level, and Ali McNeil and Alex Anzalone and all these stars, I would have honestly pondered whether 15-2 or 2-15 was more likely. And the fact that they have made it the former is a huge testament to Campbell and his coaches.
Yeah, you brought up the assistant coaches there, the offensive defensive coordinator with the Lions. Both have been in hot pursuit. Teams have been in hot pursuit of them for head coaching positions. Down here in New Orleans, we are interested, obviously, Aaron Glenn, who was here for some time and has interviewed virtually for the head coaching spot here. Just curious, some of your insights on what he's brought to this Lions team overall. We've gotten a little taste of what he was like in New Orleans, but just what's he been like as the DC in Detroit?
Yeah, his players swear by him. And I'll start by saying this. I have felt really ever since the Saints fired Dennis Allen that Aaron Glenn was destined for New Orleans and destined for that head coaching job. And I know they interviewed him for that vacancy before hiring Dennis Allen. And by all accounts, Aaron Glenn showed really well. It just made more sense at the time, I think, for the team to hire internally. But I really believe that he will be coaching the Saints next season. I know the Jets will have a say in this matter as well. But anytime Aaron Glenn talks about his time in New Orleans, and it's quite often, he speaks about the franchise and the city and even the ownership in really glowing terms. And you know, people around the league might look at the Saints head coaching opening as maybe the least attractive, just given the salary cap situation and the team's like general trajectory for the past 3-4 years. I think Aaron Glenn looks at it and sees it as an awesome opportunity to come back to a team where he spent 5 years as a coach and a year as a player and restore that franchise to what it was when he was part of it. And you know, the same thing lured Dan Campbell to Detroit. He once played here and he saw a job that he could leave a legacy at and that he could bring pride back into the city and into the fan base. I think Aaron Glenn views the Saints job the same way. Anyway, to answer your question, he has much like Dan Campbell, a really sharp mind for the game. And then he has the ability to rally his players and to get them to believe in what he's telling them. And, you know, the assistant coach of the year award should go to Aaron Glenn. I can't believe this is still a top 10 scoring defense with all the attrition. And, you know, the ultimate argument for Aaron Glenn's head coaching future was really in week 18 against the Vikings, an offense that had really killed everyone this year, including in some ways the Lions in that first game, and missing again half their starters. They come out and they just blitz Sam Darnold into oblivion, and Aaron Glenn may have broken Sam Darnold. I don't know if Sam Darnold will ever be the same, and Aaron Glenn's a big reason why. There was a poll last year, I think it was done by The Athletic, ranking the assistant coaches on opposing teams that players would most want to play for. And Aaron Glenn was far and away the number one ranked coach. I think that says maybe all you need to know about his ability to command a room, to rally a locker room, and to get players to buy into what he's selling.
Jeff, Will's got me pumped up.
No, and I think you make a really good point. Like, you know, people will look at the Saints situation and say, like, hey, this is a negative situation. But I think it's, you know, it's helpful when you have a guy who was there when everything was going real well and he understands how that can go well. You know, I guess just to stay on Aaron, is there any story or moment or, you know, anecdote from the last couple of years that you think kind of encapsulates what you're talking about there with Aaron, with the Lions?
Yeah, you know, there was one moment in the first season, I believe, under Dan Campbell, when I forget who they had played, but the defense was ranked like last in the league, and they had just been bulldozed by some team, and they were 0-10-1, and Aaron Glenn on the following Monday took his defense out to the practice field with the physical tape of that prior game. The actual, like, you know, VHS. Maybe it was a
DVD. They buried it.
Yeah. And then he gave his guys each a lock and a key. And he just said, from here on out, we lock the effing gates. And they did play a lot better down the stretch. And I think some of that momentum spilled into the preceding or the succeeding seasons.
You know, that's actually a Sean Payton thing. I think he learned that from Sean Payton, the whole burying the tape thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And his players bought into it.
I was just going to go now to the offensive side of the ball and just curious what you've been hearing about where the likelihood of Ben Johnson is. Could it be with the Las Vegas Raiders?
Yeah, you know, I think it could be. It's amazing because I was talking about Ben Johnson's head coaching future at this time last week, and the Raiders weren't even on the radar. And then Tom Brady gets involved and vouches for Ben Johnson and recruits Ben Johnson to go take the interview. And now the Raiders are said to be enamored with Ben Johnson, which is not surprising. I mean, you know, that guy would present well in a head coaching interview. He does have face of the franchise qualities and obviously one of the sharpest offensive minds in the game. The one thing about the Raiders that gives me pause is, I mean, what kind of roster they are you taking over? And I think Ben Johnson, maybe unlike Aaron Glenn, would prefer to land somewhere where he has clear pieces in place, including a quarterback. It's one reason why, to me, like, Jacksonville is a sneaky dark horse here. I know they're far from the most glamorous NFL franchise, but with Trevor Lawrence there and some other intriguing offensive pieces, and in a market where Ben Johnson won't face the same level of scrutiny as a place like New York. He's also interviewed out there with the Jets. I wonder if that's a better fit for him. But anytime Tom Brady's involved, it's kind of hard to bet against him. So he'll be in town here this weekend. He's calling the game on Fox, Lions Commanders. And no one's really even sure if he's allowed to talk to Ben Johnson on the field before tomorrow's game, like commentator to coach, because he's also a minority owner of the Raiders. So yeah, Ben Johnson was asked this week, like, are you allowed to talk to him? And he was like, above my pay grade. I have no idea. So
yeah, but you should find out. Yeah.
Work there, but Brady certainly makes the Raiders an option, at least, for Ben Johnson.
It's interesting. You know, another thing that's going to come up this weekend that, you know, I assume most people have watched the Lions. Lions are on primetime all the time, so it's not like they're going to catch anyone by surprise. But, you know, if you flash back to last year against the 49ers, fourth down decisions, everyone's freaking out like, hey, I can't believe he's making all these crazy calls on fourth downs. And I'm like, guys, it's only crazy if you haven't been paying attention, because this is Dan Campbell's whole thing. His nickname is Dan Gamble for a reason. Like, yeah, he's making these leverage decisions to give them the best chance to win. If the numbers say go, if he feels like he's going to gain an advantage, he's going to go. Sometimes it feels crazy, like, you know, going on fourth down rather than kicking a field goal to win a game or basically win a game. You know, I think it was the Packers game. I can't recall exactly which one, but it was like, that seems like even for a guy like that, that seems pretty, pretty bold. But, you know, I just think as we get into this game, it's important to remind people, like, this is probably going to happen. You're probably going to be sitting there at home saying, oh, he's definitely going to kick here. Like, what do you mean he's not going to kick here? This is insane. And I'm just curious, from someone who watches that all the time, did it take a while to adjust to that level of boldness on the fourth down decisions? Like, where do you land on that subject?
Yeah, it did. You know, and it was interesting because the first year he was doing it out of necessity for an undermanned roster. It was a way to steal possessions, and it was the only way that they could stay in games. Now they do it as a way to win games. I mean, I'm glad you referenced the numbers, because he really does trust what the analytics say in most cases. And I think a lot of people view Campbell as an old school traditional coach, and they view those decisions as sort of rash and reckless in the moment. But if you look at the decision to go for it on fourth down or not go for it based on win probability added, that the two teams in the NFL who have made the right decision most often this season are the Lions and the Commanders, who are obviously playing each other tomorrow night. And so this is a game where maybe the punters can just hang out at home and watch on TV. I don't know how often they'll be called into duty, but when Dan Campbell makes those decisions, he's not doing it from this place of I'm going to show you that we're tougher. He's doing it because the Lions, based on the numbers, gain the advantage, and because they have such a strong offensive line that they can more often than not convert fourth and one, two, or three. And so I think that's part of it that's probably ignored by those analytics, is that, like, the equation, the math, is swung in the Lions' favor because of their personnel. He trusts their personnel, and most times the players come through.
Yeah, and I'm sure they spend a lot of time working on those fourth down plays, so they probably run them as well as anybody as well at the same time. Yeah.
The Lions, I know, a steep favorite in this game, 9.5 points. For you, what are the keys in this matchup against the Commanders team that, man, oh, man, they're dangerous too with Jaden Daniels under center?
Yeah, definitely. It's a huge number for a divisional weekend playoff game. I think the key here for the Lions is basically, can they run it the way they've run it most of the season while also getting David Montgomery back? You know, the Commanders' run defense has been pretty weak all season long. I know it's been maybe a little better of late, but I think the Lions can control the game in that regard. And then defensively, it's just limiting Jaden Daniels when he's out of the pocket. I was talking about this earlier today, like when the Lions played the Bills and Josh Allen killed him anytime he got out of the pocket, not by scrambling, but by making those off-script throws downfield when receivers extend their routes and the secondary loses contain and he finds a guy for a 40 or 45-yard bomb. It to me, and even Alex Anzalone said this week, you know, like, he's going to escape the pocket. He's going to make some plays with his legs. But when he's out of the pocket, we have to plaster in the secondary. We have to find our guys, eliminate those big plays in the air. And I think the Lions, on the whole, will be able to do that. And I think just with their offensive firepower, that they'll pull away late in this game. I actually think they will end up covering. I think it's a high-scoring back-and-forth game for most of it. But I think a late touchdown or a couple late drives, fourth quarter by the Lions, swing this game and the spread in their favor.
Want to appreciate the time, Will. Have a great time at the game, and hopefully be seeing you maybe in New Orleans for the big game.
Yeah, I would love nothing more, man. I came down there for Mardi Gras in my college days and discovered they sold both big-ass beers and huge-ass beers.
Yeah, they're different. They're different. Yeah.
I'm trying to come back down there to get me some of those.
Awesome stuff, Will. Appreciate your time, man, and have a great game.
All right, you guys too. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Will.
Will Birchfield covering the Lions for 97.1 The Ticket in Detroit. We're going to take a break here on Sports Talk and get back to your text and calls right after this on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk, also known as our Power Hour edition of Inside Black and Gold, Jeff and I's podcast that we put out weekly. And I want to get into our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. We've got George in Monroe. Jeff was talking about the Saints draft, and George wants to chime in. What you got for us, George?
Yeah, good evening to you fellas. But look, I know people have been talking about how the Saints have been missing out on the draft picks. But what I don't understand, I don't see it that way. I mean, look at the players, whether it be a free agent or a draft pick, that they let just walk, give away for nothing, didn't want to pay the money. I mean, you got Marcus Williams, you got Henderson, you got, the linebacker, Caden Ellis, you got Zach Bond from last year. I mean, just by their team, it seems like I watched the Saints play. They got like Zach Bond. He leads the Eagles in tackles this year.
Been a beast.
Caden Ellis, he led Atlanta in tackles this year. And they have let some really good players lead there. Now, I know you can't pay everybody, but what is the deal when you draft a player and you want to develop that player and you get that guy like Zach Bond? They finally figured out what a good player he was the last year, at the end of the last year he was with the Saints. And they let him go to Philadelphia. Now, I don't know, maybe they couldn't afford him, but hey, if you can't afford to keep a player, to me it doesn't matter. I know people look at things different, but to me, I don't care if he's a draft pick or a free agent. If you draft a number one draft pick and say a number four, and the number four draft pick can outplay the number one draft pick at the same position, why is people saying, well, this guy's got to work out, And that's just like Derek Carr now. Look what Denver done with Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
Well,
before we change the subject, I do want to talk about the draft. And, I think you make some good points with Zach Bond. And, the issue with Zach Bond is, okay, who's he playing over, right? And I think there's a couple things that have happened. And you mentioned Trey Hendrickson, guys, Marcus Williams. So you're going back to 2017, and that's really the last great draft the Saints have had. And yeah, they did let a few of those guys walk, but I do think you hit on an important point, which is the player evaluation and the alignment between, hey, we drafted this guy, we think he's going to be a good player. Well, you got to play him, And the issue I think the Saints ran into is DeMario Davis played forever, and are you going to bench DeMario Davis to put Zach Bond on the field? Because that's probably what you would have had to do to get Zach Bond on the field. Now, you mentioned, could you not afford Zach Bond? The Saints could afford Zach Bond. Mickey Loomis said they tried to re-sign Zach Bond. The issue was Zach Bond wanted to play, and the Saints could not promise him playing time because Dennis Allen wasn't going to play him over to Mario Davis. So he went to the Eagles, a system that fit him a little better. And, they run a 3-4, kind of that hybrid scheme, so he can play that inside linebacker spot next to Kobe Dean, and he did, and he started in that role doing what he kind of felt like he could have done all along, and the Saints just couldn't find a spot for him. What I'll say is, yes, you do need to keep the players you draft that are quality players, and the misevaluations are a problem, but they become even more problematic when, for example, Trey Hendrickson, you let him walk for a few reasons, one of them being you went all in on Marcus Davenport, right? So,
and Trey was, he was mired with injuries except for his final season here.
Sure, but my point is, like, okay, are you going to break the bank to keep Trey Hendrickson around when you just traded traded up into the first round to go get Marcus Davenport? Now you're going to play Marcus Davenport. So you already have Cam Jordan, you have these guys. So it becomes, okay, when you're misevaluating in the draft, you are going to make decisions based on, hey, we invested in this guy, and you know, that's where you end up in the situation you have where, yeah, you watch the Bengals and it's like, man, Trey Hendrickson's leading the league in sacks. Wish we had him. You know, Zach Bond's leading the league in tackles. Wish we had him. Caden Ellis is, you know, a quality player as well. You wish you had him, but you're not paying $27 million to your backup linebacker. And so I think that's where when people complain about the roster getting older, that's where it becomes an issue. Like, okay, we had Zach Bond. We couldn't play him because we were dedicated to DeMario Davis playing until he's 90. So Zach Bond goes in and stars for the Eagles, and that's frustrating. But at the same time, you got to continue to stock that deck with quality young players on rookie deals because you're not going to fix the salary cap without that. And I would love to move on from Derek Carr in the sense of like, hey, you know, would be nice to reset from a salary cap perspective. The problem is, it's going to take 2 to 3 years to if you do that this year and move on from him and come back. And I don't think you have the players to replace him. So, no, I agree with a lot of things you said, but I do think that it is important to draft better to get back to where you need to go. I don't think you can get there through free agency. I don't think you can get there through, you know, just holding on to these guys for forever and hoping that the roster around them, and I'm talking about Cam Jordan, Tyrann Mathieu, DeMario Davis, Taysom Hill, we'll get back to the point where you're a Super Bowl contender. You have to bring in players through the draft.
Yeah, I understand the frustration of when you see these guys leaving and thriving in other places. I thought that immediately with a guy like a Caden Ellis, just because he was a late-round pick. He was finally developing, and the year he really did break out, the next season he left for Atlanta. But that's because you also had the Ryan Nielsen went over there to become the defensive coordinator in the ATL.
I just think, you know, guys want to play, right? And like, you're not going to be able to re-sign Zach Bond and say, yeah, you're going to be a special teamer. Like, no. He wants to go play. He didn't sign a big contract with the Eagles. Like,
right.
His contract with the Eagles was not extensive. Like, it was manageable. They just could not.
Yeah, the vision here was never really.
Never made sense. It was
for Bond, right.
It was a pick that felt like, hey, we like this guy. And then the head coach was just like, I don't think it's going to work. And there was never any commitment to it working, and it didn't work.
Well, I guess it was hard for him to get onto the field, too, when you got a guy like DeMario Davis and Pete Werner around.
Yes. Well, and that was the other problem is they went and drafted Pete Werner the next draft. And I was like, all right, I guess we're never playing this guy.
The music's playing us out, so we'll take a break, come back with more sports talk and Inside Black and Gold podcast right after this on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk, a.k.a. our Power Hour for Inside Black and Gold podcast. Jeff checking out the Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. 5887 saying, did you just really say Taysom Hill? Jesus, no. Referring to the fact that you said, hey, if you're going to go through this rebuild, maybe you just stick Taysom at quarterback.
I mean, it's because he's Mormon? Is that why? No. I don't know, man. I'm just saying if you move, I'm not saying like all things being equal, Taysom Hill is your best chance at quarterback. I'm saying if the Saints go the route, they hire a head coach, he's like, I want to clean up the cap. I want to take the hits. I want to do what the Bucs did. And just eat it all, eat as much as possible, and then go the cheapest route available that we could probably win some games or at least be competitive at. Like, I don't want to go with a rookie who doesn't have a future. I want to go with a guy I can trust who's started games at the NFL level, won games at the NFL level. And I just think, hey, you're paying him. He's on the roster. So if the options are you take a massive cap it from Derek Carr, you don't feel comfortable throwing Spencer Rattler to the Wolves, and you have Taysom Hill under contract, would you rather go pay Sam Darnold? Would you rather go pay some of these cast-offs? You bring Andy Dalton back? Like, I don't know. I'm just saying, if you end up in that scenario, why not Taysom Hill? Tell me, because you're not playing. I don't know how much longer you can play Taysom Hill like the Taysom Hill you played this Taysom Hill year. This fighting Taysom Hill offense. You just can't stay healthy that way. So if you want to get some value out of that contract – I think that's maybe the only way you can do it. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying.
There could be a combination of like a Taysom Hill and Spencer Rattler combo there.
Yeah, why not? Like, I want to get something out of Taysom. So, I don't know. Let's see what we can do.
That's a wrap on our show today, folks. Thanks for tuning in, and everybody on YouTube as well that has been chiming in and listening. Gentlemen, what's your plan for this weekend, Jeff? Anything good you got going on?
I'm going to watch a lot of football.
Yeah, that's pretty much
order some wings.
What it is for me, too, as well.
Yeah.
Pelicans tonight, action starting 7 o'clock on 870 a.m. Pre-game coverage has been going on. I'll be rolling it right into that soon. Hopefully they can pull out another victory, get their first three-game win streak of the season. Thanks again for tuning in. For Jeff Nowak, Charlie Long, I'm Steve Geller. Have a great night, everyone, and happy Friday. Enjoy the weekend. Talk to you on Monday. Who dat?
Who dat?